Abram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, we're still talking about Ukraine, and we got a little more that we've got to cover. And because it has not been, you notice, Sandy, it's almost like it's the local news is not talking about it. It's pushed back. There's so many different things going on, I guess, that they have to look at what the news, the national news and things like that, is all these other things are happening. And so Ukraine is, the American people are just...
Well, the half-life of the news cycle is pretty short. And so when things have been in the news cycle too long and when there's nothing new and different to report about it, you know, there's a... You know, the war in Ukraine, the news looks pretty much the same day after day. We've
right.
got Bakhmut. They're still fighting in Bakhmut. We still don't quite understand what's going on because the news gets filtered through both sides. And so, you know, at some point, it's like it's the same as yesterday, and the news tomorrow is going to be the same as today. And so they stop covering it with any. It goes from front page to back page pretty quickly.
So, look. It just appears as if, for the most part, this war has been supported more so by Democrats than by Republicans, and even Democrats are weakening in their support.
Well, I mean, you know, something that goes to the back page but continues to be sucking over $100 billion out of our budget, you know, that's a big deal, and at some point it begins to take money away from other projects or other things, and we have to begin to evaluate, like I said in the very beginning, whether this is an area of actual strategic interest and important strategic value to the United States. Is it really a matter of our real politic or not? And and my evaluation at the beginning was that it was not. And that we would not have the appetite to stay there over the long haul. Trump talks about settling it in a day. Clearly, the only way you settle it in a day is by deciding to withdraw support from Ukraine so that they're forced to negotiate a rapid settlement with Russia. And if we had not provided them with the encouragement that we provided them with in 2020, late 2021, they probably would have negotiated something with Russia that would have avoided the conflict. So, you know, the world is in a much different place today as the result of the West's willingness to provide promise to Ukraine that allowed Ukraine to invest itself in standing up to and resisting negotiations with Russia, which led to a war, which has led currently to the decimation of Ukraine as well as Russia. But Ukraine has not got the staying power that Russia does.
You know, Sandy, and these words from President Joe Biden, and then we'll go to the phone lines. President Joe Biden and the senior national security team have repeatedly said the United States will help Ukraine as long as it takes. People are now starting to question that as long as it takes. You mentioned something that I thought was kind of unconscionable before we went to break. You mentioned 5 years. And I think people are expecting to see something, you know.
Well, hopefully
I know you're hoping
Saudi Arabia thing with 24 countries dealing with Zelensky and Ukraine trying to come up with peace. But, you know, we spent 20 years in Afghanistan. And we needed to pull out of Afghanistan. Trump announced a pullout date. It was finally exercised by Biden. There are some callers, CJ, could mention the fact that the final withdrawal from Afghanistan didn't go swimmingly. But we got out of Afghanistan after 20 years and after many, many dollars spent there. And whether we left some munitions behind, I know that number could well come up, $85 billion or whatever the number was in the Bagram Air Base. All of that is kind of a makeshift argument for saying we should have stayed there even longer. You know, we wouldn't have had the Bagram Air Base, nor would we have had all those munitions there if we hadn't gotten stuck in the quagmire and been there for 20 years and spent $1 trillion. So, you know, we have to be careful up front. We have to end up, we have to develop end games. We have to have strategies. And I'm afraid that our foreign policy under any of the administrations, Republican and Democrat, over the last 25 years have lacked any notion of endgame strategies or real critical strategic interest of the United States.
All right, let's go to the phone line. CJ, good morning to you. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. I know you won't keep me on long before Sandy speaks over me.
Well, as long as you don't change the subject. Well, as long as you don't change the subject.
Okay, well, you know, what topic can we touch now without a distraction from the actual facts of what's going on today? You know, paying billions of dollars for prisoners to Iran. We are safer and more prosperous with a Republican, no doubt about it. And, you know,
just hang on 1 second. So define that. Why? What is it about a Republican that makes us safer than a Democrat? If you think it's that simplistic, I'd like to hear you explain that.
Because Republicans do what they say they're going to do. And this president, remember, you know, when you mentioned it, Sandy, you forgot to mention the 13 Gold Stars families that just testified about the failures in Afghanistan. You know, you obviously didn't hear their cry for this commander cut and run. And this president, Biden, cut and run, promised that this war in Ukraine wouldn't happen. Remember, he's the only one that could go toe to toe with Putin. Well, you know what? Ukraine wasn't invaded during Trump. And you know what? 13 soldiers didn't die in Afghanistan.
Okay, so you're all over the place.
That's the only pop.
CJ,
Focus. Well, you know, actually, CJ, 13 soldiers didn't die during a retreat during Trump, but significantly more than 13 soldiers died in Afghanistan during the 4 years of the Trump administration. So it depends on what battle you want to point at and when the soldiers were lost and how. But no soldier lost is a good thing, and no soldier lost is something to be ignored. And I lived through the Vietnam conflict and what wasn't there, but lost friends and have friends who were forever damaged by it. But if you want to go through history and look at when the country has been at war or gone to war and under what administration and what party was in power, I don't think you're going to enjoy that historical analysis if you want to do it on a partisan basis. Personally, I'd rather just do it on a historical fact basis and look at what the policies were that led to or the problems and led to the wars. But we've been in more wars and lost more soldiers under Republicans than we have under Democrats.
CJ?
Can I respond?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? The mere fact that a year and a half prior to the end of that war and the disaster, it's the only policy that Biden claimed to keep because he wanted to be out there by September 11th to claim that we're out of Afghanistan. But we left hundreds of Americans and thousands of allies behind, Sandy. So you can claim it a success like the administration.
First of all, this is not – I don't understand the contest you and I seem to have this is not that kind of a show, and this is not a personality contest. But incidentally, the problems that were associated with losses of lives has occurred under various retreats, and under Trump, I think we pulled the plug on a substantial number of Kurds and Kurdish allies to the point where we lost, many of them were put in a complete situation of risk vis-a-vis the Turks and the Syrians. And we had enlisted their aid and their support and abandon them under the Trump administration. And so we can talk about that. But I think we should just talk about our general foreign policy and the extent to which we're doing things smartly or not, because that wasn't handled well either.
Okay, well, then how about this foreign policy, the open border? And now we hear Democrat mayors, sanctuary cities, crying out for help from Biden, who's caused this disaster.
And, oh, okay, CJ.
You know, we're living your policy.
Oh, okay, CJ. Thank you very much for the call.
So one thing about the border disaster is that it wasn't created by the current administration. In fact, we had a commission appointed by George Bush II 20 years ago to try and work on what was then viewed as a disaster, an impending disaster. So we've been at this for a long time.
You know, it's not as simplistic as CJ wants to make it out. You know, he fails to understand that it was a Republican president, George Bush, that took us into Afghanistan, whether or not. But you don't look at it from the perspective of Democrats and Republicans. Only CJ does that. You know, and to blame one side or the other. When people go to war, when young men and women are sent all over this world to fight and lose their lives, no family ever says it was a Democrat who sent us or a Republican who sent us. That's not what they say. And any fighter or any person who signs up for the military doesn't ever say, I'm signing up as a Democrat or a Republican. And so it doesn't matter how CJ wants to twist that. That's not the way it works. Got to go to a break. Ken, I see you. We'll get you on the other side. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
A guy named Bill out in Econowoc. Bill's got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, you raise the bar high for integrity. You are a community radio station, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin.
Daily conversations about Wisconsin's latest headlines and stories. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Scattered thunderstorms likely this afternoon, otherwise overcast skies. High temperatures reach up to 83, southwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms again tonight. Lows dip down to about 62.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Ken from Sturgeon Bay. Good morning, Ken. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I do agree with you both. I don't agree much, but we should have never got involved with this endless war that's going to happen. Me, it's how do you give billions, if not trillions, to a 45-year-old man, and now he's going on the offensive by sending drones to Moscow? You think I think we're just on the verge of something serious, serious consequences. And what is his background? Do you know much about Zelensky? How at 45 years old you become president?
Well, he used to be a comedian, and the people voted for him.
A comedian?
That's what he was.
Yeah, he was an actor. He had a television show that was actually a sitcom that was the number one show in Russia as well as Ukraine, and he was quite the well known TV personality, and then became a political figure. You know, I'm not sure that age. You know, I think in the United States we'd do well to have people who were our leaders who were closer to 45 than 80, but. quite frankly, but and we have in our past had leaders of that age, JFK being one and Barack Obama being another. But so I'm not sure age is the problem, but and I'm not sure Zelensky is necessarily a negative issue. But I think putting ourselves into a proxy war in which we don't have a basic strategic interest and opening our checkbook to the point that we have does create serious problems. And of course, a war between Russia and Ukraine is bound to spill over into Russia. I mean, if we were invaded by a country, we would not want to restrict ourselves to fighting the war only on our soil. We'd try to fight it on the soil of the invaders as well. So that's kind of an inevitable outcome. Hopefully, the drones and things that are being used against Russia are not American weapons. So far, I think they are not.
Hey Ken, thank you very much for the call as always. Let me ask you, Sandy. Here on the we're dealing with some on the state level with the state Supreme Court. Your thoughts on this battle? And some saying maybe it would be better if the Supreme Court justices were appointed as opposed to elected. What are your thoughts on something?
Well, like you know, over time, if you look at the history, many of the Supreme Court justices were originally appointed to fill vacancies by governors and then ran. But the situation is such that I think the problem is more just with the judiciary that needs to be as nonpartisan as it was expected when the judiciary was envisioned. And it's the introduction of a great deal of money into the election process for judges that has, I think, eroded confidence. So, you know, it could be that we should go to a system where they actually are appointed and never have to run for office and sit for terms and then are subject to either reappointment or being replaced. But that isn't the system, and I suspect it would be difficult to shift to that system.
You know, Sandy, we do know that our government is broken. I don't think there's anybody who can argue whether or not our government is broken or not. It's broken. How can we fix it?
Well, I think you have to look for things that might have a broad impact. If you're trying to fix something, you try to get to what are the things you could do that would have the most impact? And I suspect the time is right that getting money out of politics would have.
I know, but we know that.
Well, but I'm just saying, if you're going to fix something, you've got to come up with tools. And what's the tool that might have the broadest impact? If you looked at what's wrong with politics, I think the most common thread that you can come back to is that it's become unresponsive. It's become responsive to very strident interests. It's all these things you can look at and say, okay, and if there was less money in politics, those things could be mitigated and politics would at least become much more responsive to voters directly rather than to interest groups that fund elections.
So we somehow get frustrated because, a little more than 50% of our population is voting. And younger people are starting to disconnect early.
But again, money in politics, if you vote and you don't think your vote makes a difference, the incentive to vote goes down. And I think an awful lot of the non-voting in our country is based on cynicism. Why should I vote? It doesn't make any difference anyway.
That's true.
Or I'm so angry at the system, I'm not going to vote. As a rebellion, you know, an act of rebellion against the system, It's a disgruntlement that causes you to decide you're going to sit on your hands and not vote.
But then they don't realize that the only way out, the only way forward to change is through that process, right?
Exactly. But if it's the definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result and continuing to do it, right? So I think that's been the experience with many voters, at least.
Everybody's talking about the good old days, right? Everybody, the good old days, the good old days. Well, let's talk about the good old days. Come to think of it, as bad as we think they are, these will become the good old days for our children. But why don't we try to remember that kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember. And if you remember, then follow. Oh, why does it seem that the past is always better? We look back and we think the winters were warmer, the grass was greener, the skies were bluer, and smiles were bright. Can it be that it was all so simple then? Or has time rewritten every line? And if we had the chance to do it all again, tell me, would we? Could we?
So, Earl.
Yes, sir.
This song is the basis for Make America Great Again. Nostalgia, memories. We all go back to, we all take ourselves back to warmer summers and nicer days and better times and make America that way again.
Oh, cut it off! Cut it off! All right.
Sandy. No, but I mean, that's the invidious aspect. That's the genius of that kind of a concept, which is you don't tell anyone what you're going to do. You just evoke in them their good memories and say, do you remember that?
Yeah, Sandy.
We're going there.
You just, oh, tell me it's not so.
What, I talked about Trump?
Well.
Kind of?
Just Gladys Knight and the way we were.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, never thought Donald Trump would interfere with the
Pips.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, artificial intelligence. It's not going away.
Well, you know, it's not going away. Off the record, we talked about it. You know, you use your phone and spell check. That was one of the earlier applications. And you can notice that each iteration of the updates on our phones causes spell check to be much better at predicting what our next word is going to be.
Pretty soon,
it'll predict the whole sentence because it's learning all the time. And, you know, an AI is being applied now in medical diagnosis. And there's an article in today's Wall Street Journal or yesterday's about some concerns there are about its accuracy in all circumstances. But the fact is that AI has this capacity to know everything about your patient history, you as a patient, your history going all the way back. And so it's able to install that information very, you know, instantaneously into the various symptoms and things you're presenting with, so that I think everyone agrees that at least as a tool for medical diagnosis, that AI will be very important. It's being used for the development of reports, business reports, things that are based on Excel spreadsheets and analysis of prior trends and the verbiage associated with it, such that, you know, in investment banking, the young associates who used to do that work, there might not need to be as many of them because they can rely on AI. So I think AI is one of the first instances where we've got computer applications that will really affect the intellectual way we approach business. There's no question that computers, replaced carbon paper, and they, and in many respects, replaced the number of secretaries we needed. Used to be that everybody needed, every white collar worker needed a secretary. Now there, you know, there might be one assistant for five workers because of the ability of everyone to use laptops and everything. But that wasn't changing the way we applied ourselves. Artificial intelligence has that potential.
What's frightening, Sandy, is you say it, it's learning.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence, and you referred to it as it's learning. I think that's the fear.
Well, it, you know, it, it has this capacity to absorb everything that has happened, whether it's everything you've done, everything you've written, but all of that stuff then can be used with algorithms to figure out and project what it is. When you've done that in the past, what were your next words? When you said X, Y, and Z, what were the next words after X, Y, and Z? And it'll predict, and it'll probably be right. So it gets better and better at this process. And that's a simplistic analysis of it. But chatbot ends up being this approach now of you can ask a browser a question, ask it to write something on your behalf about it, and it goes and does a great job.
That chat box is what is so mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's and you know, this whole thing is, you know, we talked off the air a little bit about China, but obviously AI is going to be very important in the future. And we're trying to get in the way of China being a leader in AI. China has been one of the leaders in the development of AI, but chatbot and some of these things require a very sophisticated form of AI that requires maybe months of learning. And the learning needs to be sequential and needs to be uninterrupted. And my understanding from what's going on right now with the chips desire of the U.S. government to get in the way of China's access to American sophisticated chips is that our chips are more reliable than theirs, not necessarily more sophisticated, but more reliable. And the reliability of those chips is important in AI because you'll be going through a process of essentially a computer system learning something for months based on all the iterations, and you can't interrupt the iterations with a crash or you have to start over again. And so it's kind of there's a significant importance to the kind of reliable chips being made in the United States, and we're apparently trying to throw ourselves in the position of blocking China's access to them. My concern about those kind of things is they're short-sighted. Can China learn how to make chips as reliable as ours? Certainly they can. Will they? Well, they certainly will if we make them, and that's what we're in the process of trying to do. Furthermore, the idea that China isn't terribly important to us is just fundamentally wrong. You know, China's on the verge, apparently, of deflation right now, much the way Japan went into two or three decades of deflation.
And almost didn't get out.
Is having trouble getting out. China might be on the verge of something like the same thing, and a deflationary, recessionary China will be very tough on the world. And the one thing it won't do, however, is make China a more expensive place to manufacturing things. Right now, China's wages are going up. China's wage advantages are going down. But a recession in China will only have the effect of making the yuan cheaper and making manufacturing in China probably more attractive.
All right. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Good morning, Earl, and good morning, Sandy. Sandy, I really enjoy your discussion on AI, and here's why. It's something I'm very fascinated with, and if you want to help your portfolio investing in NVIDIA, which is not maybe leading the race, but one of the top horses in the race for AI, I think it has been profitable or it's a good company. But let me just see if I understand AI correctly, Sandy, because I like the way you explained it. It was explained to me this way, that if you took the smartest man in the world and gave him all the resources, and his job was to cure a certain type of cancer, he might be able to do it in 5 years. He might. But if you gave it to AI, they could do it in 5 months or even less. Is that the right, correct way of...
Well, yeah. I mean, the point is that AI has this ability, computers have this ability through browsing and through their access to everything, essentially, to not only reach everything, but they can do it essentially instantaneously, speed of light. So that if you or I go to the library and we have to microfiche our way through the data, it can take a long time to find out all the things that AI can find out all at once, okay? And so that's the remarkable thing about the ability of computers to access everything at once. I went to Harvard, and the Widener Library there was the biggest library in the world. You could go there and microfiche yourself to death to write a thesis, and you'd spend all your time looking at this stuff. And AI, and Google has substantially replaced all that kind of research and made it much faster. But AI, replacing the human who does things one at a time with a computer that does it all at once, okay? And so, you know, they've already had examples of this, which was they were looking for antibiotics that could potentially fight MRSAs, these antibiotic-resistant diseases, and they fed it a whole bunch of information about various kinds of antibiotics and various kinds of infections. And within a very short period of time, like ours, they got back a set of like five or six antibiotics that the AI machine thought could be very effective against the MRSAs. And lo and behold, yep, several of them were real breakthroughs.
So hang on, Bill. So, Sandy, is it safe to say we fear AI because we don't understand it? The average person?
No,
who
I
fears
think,
it?
I, to be honest with you, I don't understand it and I don't fear it as much as the people who really understand it seem to fear it, because they seem to understand all of the various potentials of it. I lock my mind on stuff like the NVIDIA, what Bill was talking about, which is this capacity of it to do really good things. But of course, if you can do really good things, maybe you can do really bad things.
But Sandy, you know, again, the average person is concerned about, this is going to replace me.
Well, and there's that issue too. I mean, we've talked about computers all along increasing the productivity of humans to the point where there will be a need for fewer humans working. And then the question is, how do you share the fruits of the labor of those humans who work amongst all those who don't work, right? And right now, capitalism is sort of the way we do it. We feed the money upstream to the owners. But it has the potential to skew things way in the direction of the people who own the businesses and who are extracting the value from the limited number of employees and all of that artificial intelligence.
Bill?
Yes, sir. The other thing I want to ask you, Sandy and Earl, you know, they talk about China, all this worry about China, China this and China that. China is in, if they're in a war, it's an economic war. It's not a war of destruction. They don't want that. They're intelligent enough to read that that's a no-win opportunity. But they want this, they would like to have economic dominance, which we're in a race in. And I just don't see that China is this horrible threat. The other thing I can share with you in China, I know the director for the missions in China. The thing that the Chinese government fears the worst, that they can't control, and it's already out of control in their country, is Christianity. So when we talk about the fear of China, you've got to put it in perspective. They don't want the ultimate destruction of the earth. They want to, they are so focused on capitalism and that kind of stuff. What's your thoughts?
Hey, Bill, as always, thank you very much for the call.
Well, clearly China is involved with trying to be an economic powerhouse, just the way the United States is. You know, and in fact, the United States, the view of the neocons was that it was the job of the United States to make sure that America was the only economic powerhouse and that we would do whatever we could to keep other countries from achieving that status. And I fear that much of our foreign policy right now towards China is premised exactly on that, which is sort of a dog in the manger thing. We want to be an economic powerhouse. We don't want anyone else to be an economic powerhouse that reaches anything like the same level as ours. And here we see an economy, China, that has come from nowhere in 1975 to second in the world and on a trajectory to match ours. And so we're being highly reactive to that. I feel a little bit like we're, when you go to the doctor, you cross your leg, he bangs your knee with a hammer, and your foot flexes. And I'm afraid that's the nature of our reaction right now to China. It's reflex. We can't seem to tolerate the notion of allowing China to match our economic power.
Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, I was trying really hard to not, you know, bring Donald Trump on in our conversation today, but you can't. Sandy, what happens? Donald Trump is clearly going to be the nominee. I don't think there's any question whatsoever.
Well, I suffer some delusions periodically in a view that there have been other candidates with leads as big as his that have fizzled. His is probably less likely to fizzle. I will agree with you, but, you know. I hold a slight vestige of hope.
Okay. For you, a slight vestige. And I don't know, Sandy. None of this is good for this nation. The whole thing, Trump and Biden again.
Well, you know, I mean, the notion that we have to prosecute, the notion of prosecuting an ex-president, going through the court system, having that ex-president raise the defense of it being a political witch hunt, accusing essentially the whole judicial system and the political system of being rigged and biased, getting a people to believe that there is, in fact, that our government is dominated by essentially a cabal of deep state folks that need to be ridden out of government. I mean, he's announced a war on the deep state if he wins. All of this is extremely destructive of our current system. And we better have in mind what we're going to replace it with. You know, like just like I talk about us having an end game when we get into a war, we ought to have an end game in mind in a political process in which we are apparently embarking on tearing up what we currently have. Okay? What are we going to replace it with?
Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Hey, good morning, Gary. You say what?
Hey, you know, Sandy thinks that we think that there's a deep state. Well, Sandy, don't you really think that it's kind of like unfair? I mean, whoever heard, if Donald Trump was not running for president, do you think that they would be after him the way they are, Sandy?
Well, there's 1,000 people who've been prosecuted already. And many of them have gone to jail. So, yeah, I do think so. I think if he wasn't president, he would have been gone after a year and a half ago, like all of them were. I think it took much longer because he was president. It was a different story. And so, yeah, you know, I think I think the problem is that in a system like we have, it's always possible to conjure that hypothetical. Would we do this if this person wasn't a political figure? And I think we would. But it creates this whole process. And the notion that there's a deep state basically tells us that there's a belief that there are that all of our civil servants, these people who are career public servants, are in it for themselves and are taking our government and our to a place we don't want it to go. And some of that might be true, but is the way to get how do we shift that? Do we just tear it up?
So
or what is the answer?
So let me ask you, Gary, why would somebody just pick out Donald Trump and say this is the guy that the entire government is going to go after? I mean, to think that one man, this man alone, has been handpicked for the deep state to attack. I mean, why?
Don't you think that the DOJ had it out for him? The FBI had it out for him from the very, very beginning?
No, I'm saying why.
I don't know why they did.
Well, you should ask the question why they would. What would be the purpose?
I mean, I do think this. I think that people now look at the whole Russiagate thing and say, well, that was total fabrication. It actually wasn't total fabrication, and I don't think anyone has suggested that there weren't intertwined in the Trump campaign a bunch of connections like Paul Manafort and others who were involved substantially in Ukraine and in Russia with lots of money flowing that direction, or in business dealings or the rest of it. I mean, there was smoke. There just wasn't apparently fire. And so, you know, the FBI's in process with Trump got a lot of attention at the tail end, and much of it was brought out by Trump himself, actually. So, you know, I don't know. I do think that Trump was such a controversial figure and was attacking so many bases of what was the, you know, like the CIA. He took the CIA on almost immediately and directly before he was elected and then after he was elected. I don't know. You know, I don't know why exactly he did that, but he certainly put himself in the position of being susceptible to being investigated or being looked into.
Quickly. Last thought.
Well, do you think Adam Schiff, when he was talking about the Russian collusion, and he said that he had pictures in his hand, he held up an envelope on camera and said, "I got the pictures." You know what? He was a bold-faced liar. He had no pictures, and he knew it. He never showed them to anybody. I mean, I'm just telling you, they had it out for him before he was even inaugurated. The day that he became, when he got elected, the FBI, everybody had it out for him, and they were not going to let him.
So let me ask you, had it out for him for what reason?
I think that they thought he was dangerous, but the thing, you know what? There's a lot of people, even a lot of Democrats, that said, "Hey, the economy was good. He was a good president. He had a big mouth." And
Gary, I wish we had more time. We got to go. Thank everybody who made this show go. Thank you, Sandy. I'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll be back.
Somebody's home.